You're listening to the Wildcat 91.9, and we would like to welcome you to the Nonviolence Half Hour. The half hour show dedicated to talking about nonviolence issues, things that are happening in society, experiences related to pop culture, and how we as individuals can make our community more awesome and violence free. And we share some pretty rad music. So we are Jessica and
Jenna.
We are two anti-violence advocates from the Center for Advocacy, Response, and Education on campus. That is the CARE office. And as you may know, if you are an avid listener, which hopefully you are to the show that we have had, every Nonviolence Half Hour, we choose a topic and we tackle it in our 30 minutes. So this show, we are going to talk about how friends and family can support victims that they know, victims who've experienced domestic and or sexual violence. So we oftentimes get the question, how can I be more supportive to my friend, to my daughter, to my brother, to my mother who has survived or experienced domestic violence or sexual assault? So we're going to talk about what to do, what not to do, the most helpful things that we've seen, the most unhelpful things that we've seen. But first, we're going to start with some music. So this is Future Islands, Seasons Waiting on You, the Wildcat 91.9.
Thank you.
is the Wildcat 91.9, and this is the Nonviolence Half Hour. You were just listening to Future Islands, Seasons Waiting on You. And today on our show, we are talking about the best ways to support survivors of domestic and sexual violence. And we talked a little bit why we chose this topic. Really, Jessica and I get this question all the time, is how can I best support whoever in my life has experienced this. So we wanted to give you a little background about why this is such an important topic, some things that a survivor might be experiencing, and how you can best support them. So I think we want to start this with talking about how a survivor of sexual violence or domestic violence, you know, they've experienced a trauma. And so physiologically, there's a lot of things happening for them. It's within even the body, a very hard experience.
Researchers talk about when you experience a trauma, like your how you remember things, so your memory storage and memory loss sometimes, or memory recall is different, where you store those memories in your brain, so the amygdala versus the hippocampus versus the cortex, and how your body makes hormones or which hormones it makes depends on, I guess, the trauma and the experience or where you are. So
if you think back to those introductory science classes we all had in probably elementary, middle school, they talked to us a lot about that fight or flight syndrome. And so for survivors of this particular type of trauma, a lot of times what they experience is their threshold for triggering that fight or flight response is much different for those who haven't. So essentially their bodies can be running on overdrive a lot, which is physically exhausting, emotionally exhausting, mm-hmm. And just confusing and frustrating for that survivor. They might seem on edge. They might seem jumpy, mm-hmm. Might seem like they're having erratic emotions, things like that.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes they have no emotions, mm-hmm. right? So like mm-hmm. a flat affect or whatever it might be. I've seen that too. I've seen people who just want to talk about anything but. So mm-hmm. they want to talk about American Idol or Dancing with the Stars or Pretty Little Liars when I'm speaking with them right after an assault, because it's easier for their brain to not have to recall those memories in that moment. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. So yeah. If you just think about all the ways that you deal with stress as an individual, and then all the ways that you, in other experiences, create stress responses in you. So,
yeah. So that's a little bit about some of just the trauma response and the physiological response. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some actual things that individuals can do to be supportive and to be helpful. Before that, we are going to play some music for you guys. Ooh. This one is one of my personal favorites. We're going to play the Waylon Jennies, One Voice. This is the Wildcat 91.9. You're listening to the Nonviolence Half Hour.
This is the sound of all of This is the sound of one voice. When people, one voice, a song for every one of us. This is the sound of
Wildcat 91.9. You are listening to the Nonviolence Half Hour Show. That was the Waylon Jennies singing One Voice. So we are talking about how friends and family who know someone or have someone in their family who experienced domestic violence or sexual assault can be the most supportive as possible. I thought maybe we could talk about things that we've seen that were not helpful. Not to start with a negative, but, you know, just get those out of the way.
So something I see a lot, and Jessica, correct me if you don't see this in your work, but something I see a lot that people think is helpful, but I hear back from survivors isn't, is those in their life then completely taking over their choices, so not respecting their autonomy and their decisions, but really kind of just overreaching and making all decisions for them, which they think is protective and helpful, but really is taking away from the autonomy of that survivor. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen that at all.
I agree. I think it's almost more important to not do that with someone who's been sexually assaulted or raped because they had a very important choice taken from them, and that was whether or not they wanted to enter into intercourse in that mm-hmm. moment. So giving them as much choice as possible is you know, gonna be the sort of best way to give them back that control. But yeah, especially when I hear families or people who are just trying to be helpful say, well, you need to do this, or mm-hmm. you should do this, like, you know, you should get a protection order, you know, you need to file a police report. I mean, those things sound very easy to say, but they come with a lot of other stuff.
Mm-hmm. And something we definitely, in our training, and we certainly employ this in our work, is it's not good to make those very distinctive or 100% statements of mm-hmm. never do this, or you should do this, because then if the survivor chooses for whatever reason to not take that action, so maybe you're telling them you never need to talk to this person again, but they do for whatever reason, there's a lot of shame in that, and they may not seek you out as a support source anymore because they might feel like they've disappointed you, or they might anger you by their decisions. And so mm-hmm. I think that's why we really encourage people to try to respect the autonomy of the survivor as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Certainly if someone's doing something to put themselves in harm's way, or to harm themselves, that's a different story. But aside from those circumstances, really respecting their choice about what feels right for them and what they should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Really take stock of your responses and avoid shaming or blaming mm-hmm. someone. So for instance, if someone experiences a sexual assault, trying to really, before you say something, figure out why you're saying it, or before you ask questions. I think some questions can even insinuate some blame or shame.
What kind of questions might those be, Jessica?
Well, the stock questions that are very shaming are, you know, what were you wearing?
Were you drinking?
Yeah. Which some of those questions have to be asked in an mm-hmm. investigative capacity. But, I think those are not really questions that as a helper, as someone who's supposed to be there as a support system, really need to ask. They sort of feel voyeuristic mm-hmm. in a way. Why were you out that late? Why did you go home with him or her? What did you think would happen? Mm-hmm. Those are some maybe more stereotypical questions, but even questions, you know, that don't necessarily feel stereotypical or blaming or shaming can be. And this happens a lot in domestic violence relationships mm-hmm. too, when someone's saying, you know, well, why did you text him? Well, he's the father of my child, and, you know, mm-hmm. I needed him to know that my child had a cold and that I had to take him to the doctor because the insurance is under his name, so it makes sense that I would text him. But it sort of insinuates that I shouldn't have.
So we've kind of gone over a couple of categories of things we feel like aren't helpful. What are some things that are helpful, Jessica?
I think one is just taking the lead from the person you're there to support, asking them, how can I be more supportive or most supportive in this situation?
What do you need from me right now?
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to be helpful?
Mm-hmm. And that checking in, I think a lot of people say, you know, I heard from them once and never again. And I think that's easy to do in that, especially when we don't know what to do, it's easy to disengage. And
mm-hmm.
But following up and just saying, hey, how you doing today? You know, what's going on? That sort of thing, I think.
Well, we'll come back and touch on this a little bit more, but I think it's time to play some more music.
Woo! This is Homage by Feist and Timber Timber.
You're listening to the Wildcat 91.9. This is the Nonviolence Half Hour.
To Sebris on fire by constant wind beyond the mind. And there is no psychic eye for you every night. It's Saturday night. This isn't only about another. And there is no simple explanation. And to express the deep respect, please accept this as a sensation. Homage, homage,
just
come back around.
Coming
back through
you
is something I can't understand.
Homage,
homage,
just
coming back around.
Coming
back through you is something I can't understand. I'm just a simple man. I'm just a simple man.
Wildcat 91.9, this is the Nonviolence Half Hour Show, and that was Homage by Feist and Timber Timber. Love that song. So we are talking about, how family and friends of individuals who have experienced domestic violence or sexual assault and rape can be most supportive. Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit about what we think is not helpful and some of what we think is helpful. There was one other thing that we wanted to talk about that would be helpful to do.
So I wanted to make sure we covered in this show the response of anger, either by a survivor or someone who's supporting them. I think a lot in our society, anger gets a really bad rap, and certainly it is a very hard emotion. But I want to talk a little bit about why survivors might have this and show that emotion to you. So when we think about anger, that's a hard emotion. But really, if you think about anger, it's what we would call in the therapist world, because that's my training, a secondary emotion. So it's a reaction to something else. Whatever the true emotion is doesn't feel safe for that person to experience or express. So that real emotion might be fear. It might be shame. It might be sadness, whatever it might be, but that doesn't feel safe for whatever reason or feel good. So anger comes out. So it's a reaction to that underlying emotion, which can be really confusing to both the survivor and the supporter. So I think we want to talk a little bit about if that's something that you're seeing in a survivor, what you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important to normalize any reaction mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. your friend or family member who's had this experience of violence, you know, nothing that they're feeling or doing mm-hmm. is crazy or, you know, these are all responses in their self, so the unique responses to their experience of violence.
It's a normal response to an abnormal experience.
Precisely.
We wanted to talk about also self-care for the supporter, because as we've touched on, there's a lot of components to supporting a survivor. Some of them may feel easy, some of them may feel more difficult, and it's really important to take stock of how you're doing as a helper, as a supporter, and make sure you're taking care of yourself, because it's kind of that airline rule. If you don't put your oxygen mask on first, then you're not going to be able to help others around you, and that's certainly really true. We do it as professionals, we take stock, and we certainly encourage anyone out there who's supporting someone to do the same.
Mm-hmm. So self-care looks different for everyone, mm-hmm. depending on who you are, what makes you feel good, what makes you able to disengage or decompress or whatever it is. So we're not going to tell you one way or the other how you should take care of yourself. And you probably have your own sort of list of things that you do that allow you to think about something else for an hour or get lost in something else so that you can separate from that pain and that hurt a little bit.
I definitely encourage whatever your self-care is, remember that it's not a problem-solving time. It's not time to think about what's going on in your life. It's really that time to unwind, to check in with yourself, and to make sure you're doing the things that grow you and heal you. Mm-hmm. So I think that about concludes our nonviolence half hour. We've certainly enjoyed talking to you guys today and hope you've learned a little bit something from our show.
Mm-hmm. If you want to suggest any upcoming topics, feel free to give us a call at 785-532-6444. And just let us know if you really want us to talk about something on the Nonviolence Half Hour show next time, a specific topic that's burning or a specific question that you want us to address. We'd be happy to tackle it. So.
And if you need any help or support in your own life, if something we talked about today brought something up for you, we are confidential advocates here at the Care Center, so you can contact us as well.
So we're going to leave you with a song, I think. This is the Wildcat 91.9 Nonviolence Half Hour Show, and this is Ben Howard, The Wolves.
Falling through lost spaces.